Truth Seekers, Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in tonight. However you're doing that, via the radio, internet, Sirius satellite radio, bootleg podcasts, I don't know, however you're doing it, welcome to the program. In a few moments, we'll be joined by Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. And we're going to chat for a couple of minutes about this newest twist to Attorneygate that we talked about briefly last night. And that is what is appearing to be the real reason for the firings and the replacements. It's all tied up in plans in 2008 to rig the elections. Oh, God, I hate these people. I'm sure we'll get around to some of the myriad scandals plaguing the White House like a biblical swarm of hungry locusts. Maybe the latest revelation of domestic spying abuses, this time by the FBI, not the NSA or the CIA, but the FBI. Or perhaps the Pat Tillman cover-up, or the Roe Myers-Gonzo cover-up, or the secret CIA torture facilities, or Walter Reed or Gitmo trials, or... And the list keeps growing. The scandals are popping to the surface like bubbles in a septic tank faster than Waxman and Lay can hold the hearings. Faster than bubbles in a septic tank? Have you noticed how the grown-ups in the Bush crime family have kept chuckle nuts in the background pretty much since the Democrats took control of Congress? You notice that? Cheney and Rove first sent him to South America when the Libby verdict was looming, and Attorneygate blew wide open. And since the Tillman scandal and the Valerie Plame testimony and the fourth anniversary of the illegal war and the Walter Reed scandal and the passage now of both houses of the war supplemental bill that stipulates a timetable for troop withdrawal, What has Chuckle Nuts been up to? What's Fearless Leader been doing? Well, he's been talking about alternative fuels and Greek Independence Day, and he's been busy meeting the NCAA Florida football champions. So rather than play more sound about burning corn and running cars on switchgrass and wood chips, here's Raisin Brain talking about the return of White House spokesman Tony Snow's cancer. Forget Tony. It's all about Bush.
My message to Tony is stay strong. A lot of people love you and care for you and will pray for you. And we're hoping for all the best. I'm looking forward to the day that he comes back to the White House and briefs the press corps on the decisions that I'm making and why I'm making them. In the meantime, I hope our fellow citizens offer a prayer to he and his family. Thank you.
Wow. It just reeks and drips and oozes with compassion for a fellow human being. See, this is the main thing that is disturbing to me about Republicans. All Republicans. They will redirect what is normal, would be a normal human response of compassion for someone who's ill or sick or hurting. They'll redirect it through the God nonsense. They themselves will not, cannot, refuse to display any sort of compassion, sympathy, or empathy. I have never seen a Republican anywhere on earth directly commit to empathetic feelings or sympathetic feelings or genuine thoughts of concern. They will redirect that. They'll say, well, you know, I hope our fellow citizens offer a prayer. Well, you know, God will take care of this. Well, you know, I'm sorry your child was run over by a truck, but apparently God wanted her more than he wanted you to have her. That kind of stuff. But, you know, here he is again. And as far as Tony Snow, regardless of my feelings about him as a jerk and a jackass where it concerns his politics, he is another human being. And he is suffering with something. He's got the same situation going that took my brother's life when my brother was 42 years old. So I understand completely. You have colon cancer. You have surgery. They completely alter your plumbing. You think you're home free. And then, son of a bitch, it shows up on your liver or your pancreas or your lungs or your brain or everywhere. Now, the only proper response to me to a situation like that, when it's someone who is part of your political family, your real family, your extended family, your religious family, your family, is not to say things like, I hope I'm looking forward to the day he comes back to the White House and makes decisions and briefs the press corps on the decisions I'm making and why I'm making them. My God. To me, the proper response is to just offer a heartfelt concern about his medical condition, his health condition. And on that note, I would like to make mine. I hope Tony Snow can recover. And I feel a deep empathy for what he is going through and for what his family is going through. Because it doesn't make any difference how, you know, I've gotten a couple of emails today that have kind of gloated on Tony Snow, the recurrence of Tony Snow's cancer. I can understand that kind of rage. I can. I really can. I'm not criticizing it. I'm not going to go there, though. The game changes when all of a sudden somebody has to enter into a struggle for his or her life. So I hope Tony Snow recovers, and I hope, and I mean that genuinely. I hope he recovers and comes back and as White House press secretary, so we can make fun of him again. So we can call him a liar and a prevaricator, and so on and so forth. But I don't wish that sort of stuff onto people, with two exceptions. But anyway, to whomever is out there that has Tony Snow in their thoughts and or prayers, I don't pray for people because I think that makes them die quicker. Well, that's what that study showed. But Tony Snow is in my thoughts as someone who is dealing with this sort of cancer. I've had it in my family, and I know how bad it can be. The Senate today voted 50-48 to defeat an attempt to remove the troop withdrawal date from that Iraq spending bill. It was quite a debate in the Senate about the powers of the presidency and Congress and the well-being of soldiers. 90% of the debate from the Republicans, if not 100%, was nonsense, was gibberish, was designed to target the folks back home, didn't show, again, not the least bit of empathy or sympathy for what families are going through, whether they're American families with soldiers in this in Bush's vanity war or whether they're Iraqi families. Again, I'll state it categorically and for the record, Republicans are incapable of feeling empathy or sympathy or genuine concern for anyone other than themselves. And they don't even feel it for their children. If their children screw up, well, you know, God will punish them. Or, you know, you better stop because God's going to get you, or whatever line of nonsense that they use. Watching these Republicans in the House, in the Senate today, watching this freak from McCain. What planet does this guy live on? My God. Anyway, the Senate bill contains the non-binding troop withdrawal by March 31st, 2008 paragraph. The House passed one that said, it is binding, September 1st, 2008, and, of course, Bush has threatened to veto both the compromise that will be worked out between the House and the Senate. He's going to veto it, which means he is going to veto his own Iraq spending bill. This will be interesting. Right.
your range on. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Rumors are swirling that Good Friday is when is it? April 6th. That's the date that's been selected for an all-out U.S. assault on Iran. I keep seeing these email postings citing Russian journalists or Russian intelligence or someone inside the UK at MI5 or whatever. And, they certainly pique my curiosity and get my interest. But I still can't believe that is on the table. I can't. That the United States and or Israel will launch an attack on Iran. I can't. I just... And what is so screwball-y to me in listening to little bits and snatches and pieces today about the Iranians who have taken the 15 UK sailors and Marines hostage, captured them. I heard one commentator talking about the long history of Iranian forces doing that, whether it was in 1979 when they took Americans hostage or 2004 when they took some British soldiers, or now, or whatever. And I think to myself, apparently these commentators don't understand that in 1953, we overthrew their government. We didn't take some Iranians hostage. We sent in a couple of CIA operatives, one of whom was General Norman Schwarzkopf's father. And after Mohammad Mossadegh was elected by the Iranian parliament to be their prime minister, to be their leader, and he was talking about, oh my, nationalizing the oil fields, we said, no, hell no. Oh, no, you don't. So we overthrew the government and established the Shah. And immediately, with the help of the UK, the Israelis, and the United States, the Shah was able to establish a secret police force that was as murderous and torturous as anything on the planet at the time, the Savak. And until the Shah developed cancer and died, until Ayatollah Khomeini started rallying his countrymen from Paris with the audio cassettes he was sending home, until that moment, the United States, Israel, and the UK backed the Shah of Iran. Human rights violations, murder, mayhem, torture, got to have access to the oil. Got to not have a threat against Israel. Of course, the Iranians, not being Arabic, but being Persian, deep in their hearts don't give a damn about Israel. They really don't. Any more so than any other country does that is in that part of the world, I guess. But as I listen today to all the gibberish about how the Iranians like to take hostages. And I think to myself, yeah, and the Americans like to overthrow governments and put in our own puppets, whether it is Chile or Iran or, oh God, how long a list you want? South Vietnam, the Philippines, you want me to continue? Nicaragua, how about Cuba? On and on and on. I know, Honduras. No, El Salvador. Guatemala. Mexico. On and on and on. But the Iranians like to take hostages. Well, I tell you what. Let a naval patrol of Iranian military people get inside our 12-mile limit? Or do we have a 200-mile limit at this point? As the UK sailors and Marines did, where it concerns Iranian waters. Now, I realize that area is in dispute, but let's say it's in dispute between the United States and Canada. And let's have some sort of decked out, pimped out military craft swarming with Iranian soldiers enter into or near our territorial waters. How long do you think it would take the United States military, the Navy, and the Air Force to turn that ship into an oil slick? Ah, but the Iranians take hostages.
Better watch what you say. Come get out of the way, boys. Quick, get out of the way. You'd better watch what you say, boys. Better watch what you say. We've rammed in your harbor and tied to your port, and our pistols are hungry and our tempers are short. So bring your daughters around to the port, 'cause we're the cops of the world.
Go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Money's good, work's okay. It's like everything is rolling our way till you gotta look the devil.
26 before the hour. Welcome back. Welcome back. Brad Friedman is the author and designer and person at bradblog.com. And he joins us now. Brad, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Last night I went to your webpage. Somebody sent me an urgent message. Go to Brad's webpage and saw this this blog by one of your diarists, I guess, about the overarching reason behind the tourney gate is to screw with the 08 election, right?
Well, it does seem to be at the heart of all of this that's going on. The report you're referring to is one by Arlen Parsa, and it's really the latest in a series that we've been doing, taking a look at what seems to be the reason for these attorney firings. And, yeah, it all seems to go back to gaming the election, first gaming the 06 election, and then with an eye towards certainly towards 2008. Karl Rove gave a speech in April of 2006 to the Republican Lawyers Association and talked about the 11 key states that will that they'll be focusing on in the 2008 election. And attorneys in nine of those 11 states have now been installed by the Bush administration since 2005. So they are clearly focusing on 2008, and they have been clearly overall focusing on election issues in this firing. You'll recall when this thing first came up that they had complaints about they claimed anyway to have complaints about the attorney down in New Mexico and the one David Iglesias and the one up in Washington that they were not aggressively enough pursuing voter fraud allegations.
Right. No, that's so cracked me up. I laughed so hard I thought I was going to throw up my liver.
And those are the phony voter fraud charges. And I had a report from the New Mexico attorney who was there at the time back in 2004, the complaints that they had about, you know, thousands of fraudulent voter registration forms. Never mind voter fraud, but they're talking about voter registration fraud. And then when they looked at these thousands of reports, they found that there was only one that was actually a legitimate case of fraud. The others were bookkeeping mistakes, whatever. The one that was a case of fraud was actually a teenager who had filled out the registration form as a prank.
Oh, God. Yeah, so, well, that was a massive voter fraud. I guess, Brad, it goes back to this. The systematic destruction of the democratic process in this country that the Bush crime family has been involved in, continues because the template, the 2000 election, I mean, isn't that kind of proved to them they could do it? They could steal elections.
Yeah. Well, and not only dismantling the sort of the, well, quite literally the hardware and software of elections through these voting machines, what they're also doing is using then the only oversight body really for elections, which is the Department of Justice. They're using this now as a political bludgeon to defeat their opponents and have completely gutted. I mean, there's a long record in the Department of Justice going back to 1965, the Voting Rights Act, of you know, overseeing how these elections are done in this country. The Bush administration has completely dismantled that department.
The Civil Rights Division.
Yep. And what they've done is they've taken the folks that they had appointed to oversee that Civil Rights Division, where you had career attorneys who were saying, hey, what they're doing with the photo ID, the phony photo ID down there in Georgia, as you well know about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, and Tom DeLay's redistricting in Texas. You had in both of those cases, the career attorneys were saying, no, this is in violation of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And in both of those cases, the Bush appointees overturned the unanimous decision of the career attorneys and implemented these policies anyway. Now those Bush appointee attorneys are spread all throughout the United States now, dozens of them, in key states, key swing states for the 2008 election. Those guys have been put in place to, well, we'll call it oversee, in quotes, the election systems in those various swing states. It's pretty damn terrifying.
It is. And the subtext to all of this, as far as I'm concerned, is the racial aspect. I, you know, I've said before, had I been born of African descent, I never would have made it to my 25th birthday. I would have been either in prison or dead or in a mental hospital. The segment of the population most targeted for voter fraud are African Americans. That's why it was so important to take the Civil Rights Division and turn it into a joke, a farce, and an absolute prostitution of what it should be. If you take a look at most of the voter fraud, the deliberate, whether it was not unlocking the precincts or having two machines instead of 12 that were required, this always or nearly always occurs in black precincts.
Oh, it absolutely does. I mean,
and it's astonishing. It's astonishing. Yeah. How does a person who is of African descent in this country, in the middle class, a professional who's doing the same thing as his or her white counterpart, maybe a lawyer, maybe a doctor, maybe an Indian chief, maybe a business person, whatever, knowing that his vote is targeted?
It's absolutely mind blowing, and they are targeting them all over the country, and they're doing it through these, you know, through these phony letters that they send out. They're sending out to black troops who are over fighting in Iraq. They're sending them letters saying, hey, we don't believe you live here. Send us back a letter and let us know for sure.
Right.
And they're overseas fighting. They can't return this phony letter. And so those are some of the folks that they're going in and saying, hey, this person doesn't actually exist. They are gaming the system from top to bottom. Mike, I was watching yesterday, Hacking Democracy, a great documentary came out from HBO. It's now on DVD. And I got an article about it at bradblog.com right now. They have an extras scene on there from the July 2004 primary that took place in Atlanta, Georgia. You know, an African-American district. The voting machines all broke down as of 1 p.m. in the afternoon because it was at a grade school with no air conditioning in the middle
I remember this.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And all the machines literally melted down. They called. They tried to get new machines out there. Nobody showed up by 5 p.m. It's all, you know, documented in this in the DVD extras on this film. Nobody showed up until 5 p.m. when the police showed up to push out the filmmakers so they wouldn't stick around.
Oh, it's just astonishing. It also verifies it, as if my thought needed verification, but it verifies what I've known ever since I've been a kid, and that is Republicans are inherently racist. They do their evil against black folk because they figure they can get away with it. They figure, well, we can get away with it because all white people are basically racist. Some are trying to overcome it. But if we can tap into that nascent or inherent racism in white people, this is the way Republicans think, then we can. This was the Southern strategy of Nixon. This is when LBJ signed the Civil Rights Act, and he said, we've lost the South for the next couple of generations. Everybody who is the least aware understands that racism has been and always shall be one of the cornerstones of the political system in this country. So it's astonishing to me that the whole scam apparently is what you're suggesting. It was to steal once again the 2008 election. Unbelievable.
It's exactly what it is. And that's why, you know, the Voting Rights Act of 1965 put the authority in the federal government to look at, you know, it's been for years that elections are essentially handled by, you know, states and localities. But it had gotten so bad as of Selma back in 65 that they had to implement the Voting Rights Act, and it put the authority in the federal government that would be in the Department of Justice, in Abu Gonzalez's Department of Justice, to oversee voting law changes anywhere in the country where they had notoriously had discrimination. So that was the firewall against this discrimination, and now the Bush administration has completely dismantled it. I mean, inside the Justice Department, the last chance, you know, of protection against the various racist jurisdictions around the country. They have had, I believe it was one, the DOJ has brought forward one case of disenfranchising voters, and it was a case in Mississippi where apparently the claim is white voters were disenfranchised under the Voting Rights Act.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that case too. But you know, as we've discussed, you and I have, Greg Pallas and I'm sure you and Greg have.
Sure.
If there's no attempt by the Republicans to rig the elections, then why are the disputed vote counts always in favor of Republicans, and the broken or faulty machines are always in Democratic districts? That can't be random machine or software errors, can it, Brad?
Odd how that happens.
It is. Hey, hold on, Brad. I got to do a break here. Hold on. We're talking with Brad Friedman at bradblog.com. If you haven't been there lately, go. You ought to go there every day. Stick around. A little more conversation with Brad when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
I saw it on TV. I know it's true. Oh, so true. 'Cause I saw it on TV.
I think American people, now that they've realized I'm going to seek re-election, expect me to seek re-election.
Oh. Oh, God. It just makes my stomach hurt. We're talking with Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. And again, you need to go there today if you haven't been there yet today. Brad, this the particularly egregious situation. I think they all suck, but the one in Arkansas, the federal attorney there, Mullins, who was replaced by this Carl Rovian operative twit, who worked on I believe the political operative term is caging, where voters segments of the voting population are targeted. Now, of course, the twit that now sits in the attorney's chair there, the federal attorney's chair, said this is nothing more than a fundraising tactic, when anyone with the sense God gave a bag of doorknobs knows that he's lying through his teeth. How much longer do you think the twit is going to be in Mullins's office in Little Rock?
You know, I think until the Democrats call for real accountability here. I mean,
wait a minute. I think his name is Cullins. Cullen?
Cummins. Cummins is the original one, yeah.
Yeah, Cummins. I'm sorry.
But Cummins.
So many names, little time.
Yeah, no, I know the feeling. until there's some accountability here, I mean, what drives me sort of mad is when we see folks, Democrats, frankly, you know, calling for the resignation of Gonzalez, calling for the resignation of Rumsfeld. When the hell are they going to start calling for the resignation of the guy who put him in office, put all of these guys in office in the first place? I mean, that's what it's going to take to get true accountability here.
Yeah, but Rove is unreached. I guess you're talking about Rove.
No.
Cheney?
No.
Let me see. Wait, don't tell me. Who?
George W. Bush.
Oh, him!
He held accountable, yeah. Sure, we know that it was, you know, Rove and Cheney who pulled most of these strings, but didn't it used to be, Mike, that the buck stopped at the White House? I'm remembering that from somewhere.
Yeah, but you know yourself that you cast that aside, just like I did, when Cheney set out prior to the election in 2000, early in the campaign, back in 1999, and Cheney set out to find a running mate for Bush, and then decided, oops, how about me?
Right.
You and I both knew, as did most thinking people, that that's it. This is going to be a Cheney presidency, because we also knew what a jackass halfwit George Bush was.
Well, let me give you a lot more credit. You were on to this bunch from the beginning. It used to be, you know, when you'd hear about this stuff, I'd say, well, that sounds suspicious, but let's wait until we, you know, can prove that there's actually something here. At this point, when you find this suspicious, that we have found so much of it endlessly, at this point, these guys need to prove to me that it is, you know, not something nefarious. And they can't. And that's the bottom line. They can't. They can't in this case. You know, they can't in this entire U.S. attorney case. If I hear one more person say, oh, there was no wrongdoing here, there was nothing illegal, you know, nonsense.
right. Nothing illegal. There's, you know, the right-wingers are still saying that. They're still saying, well, there was nothing illegal here. I think Bill Maher said it tonight on Keith Olbermann's program, that the firings, there's nothing illegal here. Well, I guess if you get right down to it, that is absolutely correct on the surface. But I wonder if Bill Maher has ever heard the term conspiracy to commit a crime.
Well, exactly, and... Well, yeah, you make a great point with that, and not to mention that, yes, lying to Congress is a crime, and when you look at impeachment, a crime is not necessary in that sense. It's a political act, and if you can see that these guys have been gaming the system politically, which is beyond a shadow of a doubt, then they need to be held accountable for high crimes and misdemeanors.
Yes, well, I'm with you on that. I got to ask you two quick questions.
Yeah.
Because we got 2 minutes here. How do you think Attorney Gate will wind up? Do you think Rove and Myers will go under oath before Congress? And secondly, what do you think is the next big scandal to overtake the Bush crime family?
Good luck. Ask me in an hour.
You're right.
As far as Rove and Myers, yeah, I think they're going to have to actually go, at least if not publicly, then at least privately under oath with testimony. But, you know, who knows how this is all going to shake out. I think Gonzalez will go, and then they'll try to run out the clock for the rest of the 2 years. And the Democrats, unless they get their act together and realize what's going on here, you know, very well may let them. They need to get some accountability here, some real accountability. But you know what? They're getting closer with all of these hearings. So much is coming out. I think at some point they're going to have no choice but to begin impeachment proceedings.
By they, do you foresee the possibility, as in the case of Nixon, where some of the senior Republicans get word to probably Pappy Bush that his boy needs to resign, or do you see that happening? I just can't see that happening.
You know what? I can't see it happening either, because they just don't have the sort of elder statesman they have anymore. Even a guy like James Baker, they completely ignore him, you know, with the Iraq Survey Group. So I don't think it's going to happen that way. No, I think the public outcry is going to become so large, because we're going to see in these hearings something that is so, you know, undeniably ugly, but that the Democrats finally have no choice to say, look, we're starting impeachment and we're starting it tomorrow. Hell, even Chuck Hagel is hinting that impeachment may be in the offing.
Well, he did bring up the I word, didn't he?
Yep.
Yeah, in the interview in, I guess, Esquire. But the media ignored, they ignored Nodell, the guy who,
yeah.
At the plane hearings. They,
yeah.
they just ignored him. The,
yep.
The president's, or
security
the,
director who
the
said there was
director.
No investigation ever into the outing of a CIA covert operative, Valerie Plame.
Right.
It's just remarkable. But you know what? That's what the media does. They ignore everything. And if it weren't for the blogs, pardon me, but folks like myself and others and you, Mike, continuing to bang this drum and report the facts despite the delinquent mainstream media, we wouldn't be where we are today. I mean,
yeah,
everything we've reported has turned out to be absolutely correct.
I'm so glad Al Gore invented the internets. Hey, Brad, thank you so much. We'll talk again. Thanks for taking time out to join us tonight, okay?
Oh, always happy to. Thanks, Mike.
All right, sir. Take care. Bradblog.com. If you haven't been there, go. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. If you missed it on the news tonight, ITT Corporation, the nation's 12th largest supplier to the United States military, that corporation, ITT, has agreed to pay a $100 million fine penalty for illegally sending classified night vision technology used in military operations by our soldiers to China and other countries. ITT is the leading manufacturer of night vision equipment for U.S. Armed Forces. They are going to plead guilty in district court on Wednesday to 2 felony charges, according to the U.S. attorney who is handling this, John Brownlee. Ah, another U.S. attorney. One count is export of defense articles without a license. The other is omission of statements and material facts in arms export reports. How about a charge of treason? Attorney Brownlee. How about treason? Brownlee said, quote, the criminal actions of this corporation had threatened to turn on the lights on the modern battlefield for our enemies and expose American soldiers to great harm, end quote. Now, according to the investigation, which has been going on for about 4 years, the data, the defense-related technical data, was given to were given to contractors in China, Singapore, and the UK in order to cut the costs of ITT and increase their profits. Homeland Security Assistant Secretary Julie Myers said in a statement, her tongue firmly in her cheek, placing profits ahead of the security of our nation is simply not acceptable for any corporation. Oh, really, Julie? How about, oh, I don't know, let me think real hard. Kellogg Brown and Root, real hard. Halliburton, real hard. Carlyle Group, real hard. Blackwater, I can give you a whole list, Julie, and I'm just a half-witted talk show host. ITT is the first major defense contractor convicted of a criminal violation under the Arms Export Control Act that was passed in 1976. The first one convicted. Now, when I heard the story tonight on ABC News, I thought, well, okay, $100 million fine, what is that? A week's profit? Okay. A day's profit? And I thought, well, $100 million is $100 million, plus it's very embarrassing. Yeah, but to who? To whom is it embarrassing? No individual has been charged. Nobody. Not the people within the... See, the corporation, the papers that is the corporation, that are the corporation, did not jump up out of an attorney's office and flutter across the ocean and flop down on the desk of a Chinese arms merchant or arms manufacturer. No, no, no. Somebody had to do it. Somebody had to be involved in this. But no individual has been charged. That's A. Here's B. That $100 million fine? Put your hankies away. The fine will be suspended for 5 years. And the company, based in White Plains, New York, can reduce the fine dollar for dollar by investing in the development and production of more advanced night vision technology so the U.S. military maintains battlefield advantage. Do you understand that, Truth Seeker? They were fined $100 million, but it means squat. It means nothing in Bush world. Nothing. All they have to do to reduce the fine, dollar for dollar. These are treasonous sons of bitches who are responsible for putting American soldiers at even further risk. All this is infuriating. Well, it is to me. They can reduce their fine dollar for dollar by saying, well, okay, we're going to put $100 million into R&D to do it all over again. Only we're going to make even more advanced night vision technology, and then we're going to sell it to the military again. God damn, I love this business. I love being a military defense contractor. Holy Jesus, I love it. Woo! I'd rather do this than, oh, I don't know, beat up mimes. It's insane. Now, how does the FBI respond to this? FBI Director Robert Mueller struggled today, so says the Associated Press, to convince skeptical senators that despite recent abuses, the FBI should retain the Patriot Act authority to gather telephone, email, and financial records without a judge's approval. Hey, you dumb bastard. Why weren't you focused more on companies like ITT? This is the first one ever to be caught. No, you want to scoop up my records or Brad Blogs or somebody listening to this program? You want to look at what we do? How about corporate America? I know that's a real tough one, isn't it, Mueller?
Grim-faced and sometimes even looking pained, Mueller testified at the panel's second hearing into a Justice Department Inspector General's report this month that revealed abuses in the FBI's use of documents called National Security Letters to gather data. Really? No! Reviewing headquarters files and four of 56 FBI field offices, Inspector General Glenn Fine found 48 violations of law or presidential directives during 2003 to 2005, and Inspector General Glenn Fine estimates there may be up to 3,000 violations throughout the FBI.
Mueller said he had instituted procedures for issuing these letters. He said, what I did not do and should have done is put in a compliance program to be sure those procedures were followed. Damn, I knew I forgot something. You know, the other day I took a leak and left home and my fly was unzipped. I'm just getting forgetful. I just forgot to put in a compliance program. Darn, I knew there was, oh, maybe 80 pages missing from my directive on how to do this. That's right, a compliance. I should have put in there,
you really do have to do this. I forgot to put that in. Oh, shaw. Jesus God. Mueller added,
we are committed to demonstrating to the committee, the Congress, and the American people that we will correct the deficiencies. I will remember to zip up my fly. That was embarrassing. You know, I came out of my apartment in Georgetown, and I walked down the street, and people were pointing and going...
Patrick Leahy responded, I still have very serious qualms. Yeah, forget ITT. You know, a five-year-long investigation to find out that the 12th largest defense contractor in terms of selling crap to the American soldier has been selling the same stuff to the Chinese. Does Lou Dobbs know about this? Lou Dobbs hates the Chinese. I wonder if I'll have this just came out. It just came out today. So well, let's see tomorrow on Lou Dobbs' program if Lou Dobbs picks up on this. The destruction of the middle class or whatever the hell he's. It's Mexicans now, but maybe it'll be Chinese. Occasionally it's Chinese. He hates them all, which is all right with me. I mean, hate them all. So the Senate Judiciary Committee held today yet another hearing into yet another Bush crime family scandal, this time about the misuse by the FBI, not the NSA or the CIA or the ABC or the XYZ or anybody else, but this time the FBI, of a Patriot Act reenactment provision slid in there, like the firing of federal attorneys and replacing without Senate confirmation, to allow the agency to snoop into all your private records without a judge's approval by using these so-called national security letters. Wow, man, how are you going to argue with that? What, are you a communist? It's a national security letter. We'll have a few words from Robert Mueller when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
If people are being investigated, it doesn't make sense for us to let them know who they are. Guarding the civil liberties by monitoring the program on a regular basis, by having the folks at NASA, the legal team, as well as the Inspector General monitor the program, and we're briefing Congress.
NASA. You mean NSA?
Yeah, but over at the FBI, George, they forgot to put in a compliance program. Damn.
All right. The committee hearings seem to be coming fast and furious these days. Here we are, Robert Mueller, the head of the FBI, explains why the FBI should retain this authority to gather telephone, email, financial records, your shoe size, and how much porn you looked at online without a judge's approval.
I do not believe, however, that the statute itself should be changed. The relevant standard established by the Patriot Act for the issuance of national security letters is unrelated to the problems identified by the Inspector General. As the Inspector General testified, the problems were generally the product of, and I quote, mistakes, carelessness, confusion, sloppiness, lack of training, lack of adequate guidance, and lack of adequate oversight, close quote. In short, the statute did not cause the errors. The FBI's implementation of the statute did.
I see. And you're going to take full responsibility, right? Right? Okay. And then, within a week or so, you'll get another Medal of Freedom, right? Ooh. What was that? Incompetence, stupidity, ignorance, inexperience, lies, a partridge in a pear tree. What did you leave out, Bob? Now, here's an exchange between Republican Arlen Specter and Herr Mueller that gets to the heart of the privacy issue at stake here. Once again, the Bushies want all the privacy and protection for themselves. Well, yeah, for their email and their energy meetings and their executive staff and their private conversations over firing attorneys and but they also want the right to flaunt the FISA laws and let NASA, as George calls it, or NSA, or National Security Agency, and the FBI gather as much personal information on you as they want to. And why? For the same reason a dog sits down and licks himself, because he can. Arlen Specter begins by asking how it's possible that so many FBI agents didn't know what the facts were before they began eavesdropping on innocent citizens. Oh my goodness, how could that happen? How could they have made thousands of mistakes by, you know, wiretapping the wrong people? Mueller claimed that it was because there were thousands of facts. Oh, God, they're all over. Facts here, facts there, a million facts, all kinds of facts, and affidavits, and national security letters, and emails, and post-it notes, and oh, my God. And, you know, the FBI agents simply couldn't keep up with all of them. Specter concluded that the thousands of facts excuse wouldn't wash because, well, you know, like agents are supposed to be trained to go through the facts and be accurate on the facts and get the facts and respect the facts before they violate the rights of private citizens, for God's sake.
How can it be that your highly trained agents make so many factual mistakes? That is the basic job of an investigator, is to find the facts and to know the facts and to make an accurate representation on the facts before you get a warrant, a FISA warrant, before you issue a national security
letter. I would make a distinction between the FISA warrant, the FISA package. It's generally...
Yeah, you want to see me juggle?
The affidavits are exceptionally long. You can have thousands of
facts. Look at my red nose!
And mistakes may be made, although we do our level best to ensure that there is no mistake.
I have a funny hat on today.
With regard to the national security letters, how that happened, in other words, how over a period of time persons would sign off on the same form is something that I've asked our inspections division to investigate to determine whether or not
is my fly
steps
zipped?
Need to be taken with regard to performance and to determine exactly how that happened, what additional steps we should take in order to address that particular situation.
Oh. Director Mueller, I'm not impressed by your assertion that there are thousands of facts. That's your job. That's the FBI agent's job. When you came to us with the Patriot Act and wanted expanded powers...
I got a trained monkey over here.
And your agents are supposed to be accurate on the facts. And if they're wrong on the facts, they're subjecting someone to an invasion of privacy, to a national security letter, or to a search warrant that ought not to be issued.
Oh, God. Do you want to see my clown outfit? I have these great big shoes that I wear. And I got pockets full of Nutty Putty. Hi, I'm Robert Mueller. I'm your new FBI director. Whee!
They keep on lying all the time. George W. and Cheney D. Couldn't win without a slimy trip. To Washington they had to run. States' rights weren't that much fun. Don't you hate that crap? They just keep lying all the time. They just keep lying all the time.
The FISA law was written in 1978. We're having a discussion in 2006. It's a different world.
Yeah, it's my world. Oh, God. Very quickly, here's some email from Angel. Mike, I'm still at a loss, not understanding why the congressmen are not asking for the list with all the people who were surveilled. It would probably be very revealing to the process. The FBI would say it's classified. They might be able to see in executive session, but I don't think the members of Congress in this case the Senate, really cares. I mean, why do you want to look at a list of hundreds of thousands, millions? Remember, the lists include millions of people. It's just. It's an impossible situation. It's a total gutting of the U.S. Constitution, Angel. That's from Malachi in Canada about the naval boarding parties we were talking about earlier tonight. He writes, "What bothers me about the situation with the British sailors is where was the sailors' ship? I imagine the British boarding parties are conducted similar to Canadian ones. The warship will maneuver to take up a position 200 to 300 yards off the vessel of interest and keep it covered with weapons while the Zodiac boats are moving into position. So where was the British ship in this situation? That's what the ship is for, to keep things from getting out of control. How could the ship the boarding party was on get surrounded by Iranian ships if standard operating procedure was being followed?" Yeah, I thought about that too, Malachi, and I have no answer. I have no answer. Was this a Gulf of Tonkin, a Gulf of Al-Tonkin incident? I don't know. To the lighter side of tonight's program, remember last night we were talking about a nickname for Dana Perino, and the one that Kathy and I choose, just one? Yeah, that's right. We're going to give away a DVD of Shut Up and Sing by the Dixie Chicks, that three copies of which were sent to us by Daryl at in Birmingham. Daryl is a web designer, by the way. And he sent me three of them. We kept one. We're giving two away. So this Friday, we are giving one away. And last night, we asked for names to go to Kathy, nicknames like the Snowman for Tony Snow and Simple Scotty for Scott McClellan. What was the bald guy's name?
We had a few for Fleischer. Ari. We had Ari the Liar.
Ari the Liar.
And we had the Pencil Neck Geek.
Pencil Neck Geek. All right, well, here I get this email. Regarding this, "Dear Mike, I can't think of an appropriate nickname for Ms. Perino, but I know one thing. I want her replaced immediately, if not sooner. I can't take her anymore. A few days was enough. I'm sure she's a nice lady. However, I've noticed that anyone who imitates her voice seems unable to stop doing it, even when they're not trying. This means you too, Mike. You have been sounding rather valley girlish since you mocked her the other night. It's not just you either. Several other talk show hosts have been similarly affected. Listeners are suffering as well. Do you know how difficult it's been to type this whole thing without inappropriate question marks? From Teresa in Ontario, Canada." Thanks, Teresa. Now, regarding the contest, you wanted to let everyone know who's sending in the what name?
Okay, guys, listen up. I really appreciate all these entries, and I want you to keep them coming to malloyproducer@AOL.com, and we will select a favorite and announce it Friday, and that winner will receive a Shut Up and Sing DVD. Two entries that I keep receiving over and over and over, and I like them, but they're just gosh darn it not going to quite make it, are Ditzy Dana and Dizzy Dana. And I like it too. I like the alliteration. I really do. But I've gotten about 50 of each, and I don't even know now who sent me the first one, but I've gotten so many more inventive
okay,
ones.
Okay, so you don't want this
so like,
anymore?
Like, no Ditzy Dana and no Dizzy Dana. And no Ditzy Dizzy Danas, Ditzy Dizzy Dana Danas, you know, and there's some brilliant ones coming in, I have to tell you.
Yeah, you've gotten some good ones. You really have. Do you want to mention about what was that one you told me about?
No, because it might win. I don't want to prejudice contest.
This will inspire people to get even more creative. What was the one that you really liked? Come on.
Well, there are two or three. And one of them that
two or three that Kathy seems to like.
And there's one that I particularly like, and variants of it are the snow hoe.
No, I don't think we can use that.
But we probably can't get away with saying that on the air.
Probably not.
Night after night.
Yeah.
And then they're just variations of that and takeoffs on her name and Tony Snow's name.
But there was one that you told me earlier tonight. Come on, tell me what it was. It was really, because I liked it too.
Let's see. Dana Perine, no way.
No, not that.
Not that one?
No.
I thought that was the one.
No.
All right. I'll have to look back through my notes.
Okay, look back through your notes and get back to us. All right. Now, there's another scandal developing. White House staff, Bush crime family soldiers, you know, the ones that go to the mattresses, are using non-governmental email addresses to avoid leaving a paper trail of their communications. This is according to Henry Waxman. They're stepping outside the system. These people are filthy. They're just filthy. Every Republican is a filthy liar, an illegal. Anything a Republican does is either illegal or detrimental to this republic. It's horrible, just horrifying. So Waxman has asked the Republican National Committee and the Bush-Cheney 04 campaign to preserve emails sent and received by White House officials using domain names controlled by those two groups. Now, this is old news. This is from Monday, yesterday. Waxman also asked the two representatives from the Republican National Committee and the last Bush-Cheney campaign to meet with his staff to explain how they handle email accounts for government officials. Waxman wrote in his request, quote, such emails written in the conduct of White House business would appear to be governmental records subject to preservation and eventual public disclosure, end quote. The use of email addresses from domains like gwb43.com. Ooh, I'll bet some Republican graduate of Princeton thought that one up. gwb43.com. The use of that domain name by White House aides surfaced in the news earlier this month when the Justice Department released all those emails between political appointees discussing the firing of several U.S. attorneys. For example, emails from Scott Jennings, a deputy to Karl Rove, came from an address featuring that gwb43.com domain name. Huh? They are so stupid! They are so incredibly stupid, the little rat bastards! Email conversations uncovered by Waxman's investigators suggest that some White House staff and outsiders believed such email, which evaded the official .gov systems, could be kept private. quote, it is better not to put this stuff in writing in their email system because it might actually limit what they can do to help us, end quote. One lobbyist wrote Jack Abramoff, citing advice from a White House aide, especially since there could be lawsuits, etc. An RNC spokesman declined to comment, saying the organization had not yet had a chance to review the letter. And we're busy destroying stuff. The White House said, and former Bush-Cheney 04 campaign chairman Mark Rasico did not immediately respond to requests for comments. No, they can't respond spontaneously. They have to get together and sit down and figure out what the official lie is going to be. A federal judge has dismissed a torture lawsuit against Donald Rumsfeld and other high-ranking military officers for the abuse of Afghan and Iraqi prisoners, including some at the Abu Ghraib prison. In throwing out the lawsuit, U.S. District Judge Thomas Hogan ruled that the defendants are not entitled, the defendants being Rumsfeld and the rest of these thugs, are entitled to immunity. The plaintiffs in the case said they had been stabbed, sexually abused, dunked in freezing water, waterboarded, beaten while being hung upside down from the ceiling in Abu Ghraib and other U.S.-run facilities in Iraq and Afghanistan. In his opinion, Judge Hogan cited other court rulings that rights guaranteed under the U.S. Constitution generally do not include foreign citizens in other countries. And the plaintiffs have no right to sue in a U.S. court, so screw you! The ruling dismissing the lawsuit had been expected. During arguments last December, Judge Hogan expressed reluctance to set a precedent by allowing the lawsuits to go forward. Now, who is Judge Thomas Hogan? Why, of course, he was appointed in 1982 by Ronald Reagan to the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia. He became the chief judge there in 2001. In May 2006, Hogan signed the search warrant authorizing the FBI to search the Capitol building offices of U.S. Congressman William Jefferson, the only such search in U.S. history. In July 2006, Hogan ruled that an FBI raid on a Louisiana congressman's Capitol office, William Jefferson, was legal. He rejected requests from lawmakers and Congressman Jefferson to return material seized by the FBI. Hogan dismissed arguments that the first ever raid on a congressman's office violated the Constitution's protections against intimidation of elected officials. He is also the judge who jailed the New York Times reporter Judith Miller.
Don't be left out. Join your friends at the NSA and Homeland Security and listen to Mike Malloy every single night. They never miss a minute.
Hi, boys. Fight me. 10 before the hour. I got an email yesterday that I found very, very interesting, and I want to share it with you. It's from Mary in South Florida. She was an advertising copywriter for 25-plus years. We were talking about, remember last night, Kathy, we were talking about the term Kleeglites and how that term is being used now where it concerns having Rove and Myers show up for legitimate questioning. Well, we're not going to place them under the Kleeglites, and how the right-wing noise machine has picked up on that. Well, listen to what Mary writes. Mike, as any student of advertising worth his or her salt will tell you, a study of the trademark name Kodak provides the answer to the Bush crime family's new media darling term, Kleeglites. George Eastman created the name Kodak back in 1888, the legend goes, by studying the dictionary and using his imagination when he was searching for a memorable name for his new camera company. He was convinced, whether through his own intuition or genius or both, that the letter K would carry extra weight with the public when it came to imprinting an image in their brains. The letter itself is rare enough in our normal vocabulary that it induces an awakening effect when seen, as if you are seeing the word for the first time. The physical shape of the letter does much of the imprinting, but so does the sound. K. Now, go back to the Rovian term, Kleeglites. Yes, this had to come down via talking points from Karl Rove, and notice it's Karl with a K. Go back to the Rovian term Kleeglites. In addition to its searing memory impact on the public, the term coincidentally carries another emotional meaning. It's a German word, is it not? Thus, you have the masters of manipulation, the kings of PR, the CEOs of doublespeak, the Republicans, once again framing the Democrats as Nazis, and how easily the public and the press fall for it every time. P.S. Rove's previous career was as a direct mail guru. Direct mail is widely considered to be the most brutal and aggressive form of advertising. That's from Marion, South Florida, who should know. More than 25 years in advertising copywriting. I seem to remember what you're referring to, Mary. I wonder if it was in that book by Jerry Della Femina that came out, oh my God, 30 years ago, about how advertising totally corrupts your brain.
I can remember some old-time comedian interview I saw a long time ago also. I think maybe Jackie Mason or something. It was a line that they would use just randomly. Want to buy a duck? Want to buy a duck? And they said they tried it with almost every other animal, and it was only funny and only got a laugh if he said, want to buy a duck?
That was,
and
it was Groucho.
Was that what it was? And yeah. It was because of the K, and they determined that K's are funny or memorable.
Well, this is very interesting because I'm trying to figure out why are they using the term Klieg lights. You know, why use that term? Why not say they want to make a spectacle, or they want a three-ring circus, or they want to grill them? Klieg lights. Well, as Murray points out, it has a decidedly Germanic sound. I don't know if the word has a German root or not. Probably. But the K. Klieg light. Klieg. God, I hate these people. I just hate them. All right, one more letter here. When we come back after the break, we are going to go to your phone calls. All right? The subject line in this one is unmitigated gall. This is from Mark. Earlier, I sent an email to my sister articulating my disgust with American politicians and leaders of both parties who make the statement, quote, "It's time for the Iraqi people to take responsibility for their own protection," unquote. I wrote this comment and felt it's something I'd like to pass on, and if you agree, please do likewise. What utter bastards. We invaded their country, bombed them without mercy, destroyed their water, sanitation, and power grid. We disbanded their army and police force, allowed mercenaries to come in, some call them contractors, and not even hire Iraqis, suck up money from government contracts. We have raped their land and their people. We have set up our permanent bases there. We have helped to fuel deadly religious conflicts and subjected every citizen to the daily fear that they will be killed or suffer the horrors of being amputated or grossly disfigured in an IED attack. And that, and some of our patriots, have the gall to say, you need to step up and fix your problems. God have mercy on the U.S., because we deserve none. Yeah, I'm getting sick of hearing that, too. When the Iraqis stand up, we'll stand down. Oh, Jesus, don't you just want to take a rifle butt to the face of the next person that says that? Don't you really want to do that, huh? Crunch. Yeah, let's go in and utterly destroy, scramble, just brutalize their society. Give them nothing to build on, nothing. And then tell them, well, when are you going to stand up and be men?
And hey, Iran, you're next.
KW writes in, Klieg lights, Blitzkrieg. Coincidence? They sound sort of familiar. Yeah, similar. Blitzkrieg, Klieg lights. KKK, the Ku Klux Klan. Yeah. All right, we have a break coming here. When we come back, if you're not online, jump in here and join us. The phone number is 800-989-1480. We'll see you on the other side at the top of the hour break. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Novem Radio. Welcome back. It is about 7 past the hour. All right, let's take some phone calls here on the Molloy program on the Nova M Radio Network. Let's start with Stephen, who's calling from Miami. Hey, Stephen.
Hello.
Hey, Stephen.
All right, okay. I didn't expect that. That's so fast. Mike, won't disappoint you tonight. Reason I'm calling, got two reasons. First reason, I wanted to mention that the potential enemies that the U.S. is supposed to have is not just from without, but also from within. And what I'm talking about specifically is if something happens, I don't know which direction the problem would originate from. For example, if something happens to the big cities in this country, what would that do to the political map of this country?
Annihilate it.
But no, I'm talking about politically. More Democrats would suffer than Republicans.
Well, yeah, but if there is another attack engineered by the Bush crime family in this country, similar to 9/11, it's over. Put a fork in it. Democracy, representative government, republic, whatever we have here is ended. Because
right,
at that point, martial law is declared, posse comitatus takes effect, people like me, Randy Rhodes, probably you, Stephen, are going to wind up in detention camps.
No, I ain't worried about it. I got a lot less to lose. I mean, for myself, I'm not worried about it because I got a lot less to lose than a lot of other people have to live for. The second thing is I want to say something to the people that are supposed to be protecting this country, the people who say that they're the patriots that are listening to this call right now. I don't care what agency it is. I want them to know that if there's any type of widespread biological, chemical, or nuclear warfare on this planet, that they can take all the cash they have, even if they're in a fallout shelter with it, and they can use it for toilet paper. And if they have any gold or any gems with them, they can use that to decorate the fallout shelter with that, because that's all it'll be good for.
That's very true.
That's to show you how strongly I feel about what's going on today, Mike. I'm not afraid to say it. Oh, by the way, that warning includes that person who a little over 2 years ago liked to watch people as they're walking out of video stores. Includes him also. All right, Mike?
Who is that, Ashcroft?
No. The person that I noticed who was watching me walk out of a video store back in February of 2005.
The one that's following you.
I don't know what he was doing, but he was there. I noticed him. He thought I wouldn't notice him. He was wrong, because when I went by him, he saw me right away, looked right at him.
Yeah?
He didn't fool me for 1 minute.
All right. Well, Stephen, just be careful, okay?
Yeah, I'll be all right.
All right. Thanks, Stephen. I appreciate you checking in. They watch me when I go into Publix.
Well, you watch Mueller to check his fly.
That's right. Shorty is calling from somewhere. Where are you calling from, Shorty?
Hi, out west. Wow, this must be Tattletale Tuesday, huh?
You're from out west?
Yeah, I'm out west, the western United States.
Yeah, well, give me a clue. What state? What's it start with?
It's long and looks like an arm.
No, it looks like a gun.
Well, okay. All right.
Yeah, it looks like a machine gun.
Yeah, it's all in eyes are different.
Well, anyway, about, Shorty?
Well, we've been trying to send you mail. This is your friend from Geneva. I'm going to go back to Geneva now for the human rights plenary sessions.
Yeah.
But you led up to everything that these troops, not, I hate to say troops, but these people that are serving unlawfully in Iraq have been trying to reach you.
Yeah.
And we tried to get on to you yesterday, and Lieutenant Colonel was supposed to be on tonight, but I don't know where he is.
The Colonel's supposed to be on where?
Lieutenant Colonel, talking to you right now, as I'm speaking with you.
A Lieutenant
and
Steve, Colonel?
Yeah, and Stephen just led right into what I was saying.
Shorty, are you 5'0"?
No, I'm younger than that.
Oh, okay, never mind. Okay, all right.
No. But a while back, I guess it was Monday or so, and it should be out soon, they sent a letter to the president, and that video that you see of him talking about the spectacle, and we got the facts and all that, he wasn't talking about the lawyers, he was talking about the troops, and he wanted me to read this to you guys, and I don't know where he is. All I know is all I heard was munitions in the air when we were trying to...
Wait a second. Some lieutenant colonel...
Yes, and people that are serving with him once this read on the air.
Well, wait a minute. Well, hold on, just a second, Shorty.
Okay.
Hold on, Shorty, take a breath.
Yes, sir.
Some lieutenant colonel.
Well, we don't want to say his name. There's
okay, that's right. Some lieutenant colonel is using you as a conduit to get information out to the American public.
They don't trust anybody over there. They don't trust those that are in uniform at all.
Uh-huh. Do you know, who's that guy in Miami that just called in? Do you know, was it Steve in Miami? Do you know my last caller? Have you guys
ever
met?
I heard that. That's what I said. That must have been from God or something, because that just led right into what we were thinking or saying.
Okay.
But I sent you two emails. We couldn't get through.
I never got them. No, let me tell you, Shorty. Hold on. What happened? The emails you sent me, they got hit by the filter that the NSA has put on my email server, and it's in their hands now. So I don't know what you said in it, but look outside right now. Look outside right now, Shorty!
Why?
I don't know why.
I'm serious.
I am too. Good God. Are you near a window?
We have them by the short hairs. That's the song, Molly.
Okay, go ahead. Read it. Read it to me.
Okay. This is number one, bring us home now. Number two, we will not fight next to terrorists, sir. Number three, we will not work side by side with child rapists. And many of us have children or will never see them again.
Now, who's this from?
These are from several of them. At the bottom, they have their names, and he told me not to list them, but
not
it did
to
go to the White House.
All right. What? It went through the White House?
It went to the president.
To the president?
As he's speaking. And if you watch that video that day, he's talking about the facts and the lawyers. He's looking up in the sky. I mean, looking up, because there's a 6'9" person there that hand-delivered it. And I'm not concerned or scared.
Wait a minute. A six foot nine.
If you look at the president speaking during that video, and he speaks about the spectacle, or whatever. Watch his eyes; they're very high up, and his pocket is not flat. It has something in it. But
hey, will you email him to me again? Because I'd love to read this, and
but this is very, very serious.
Especially,
he wants this out.
What?
And I have to get to Geneva, but he does.
Yeah, okay.
He says.
I got spinach all over everything here. Go ahead, Shorty.
We've got your back. If you have problems with your phone, it's us busting them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why did
we not get those lawyers we asked for at Fort George Meade, and why didn't they get their security
clearances?
That's
right. I know, man.
Does this mean we're going to jail, Mr. President?
No.
Now, Ms. Rice has went through all this trouble to summon these people, but you wouldn't let them get security clearances.
Right.
We are on our way home.
We're on our way home.
We will bring ourselves home now.
Bring it home.
Under certain laws, we can come home now, and our ID is our is our passport. As long as we're in uniform. But there's more on there.
Yeah.
But
okay.
Wanted that. And hi, guys. I know you guys are listening to Mike. And we come on home.
Yeah.
They're
okay.
Bringing themselves home. And it's called.
Right.
We're bringing ourselves home, Mr. President.
That sounds good. All right.
And
what
caused it all was when they saw Valerie Plame, they couldn't take it anymore.
Well, the 6'9" person, now who is that?
The delivery person.
The delivery person.
I'm serious. These men are and women are
6'9".
Determined to come home now. They will. They said they will bring themselves home.
Boop,
because
boop.
If you read the article that's there, they are now allowing enlisted people to be recruited. These are now serving. You can be waived if you're a child rapist.
Really?
A murderer. Yeah. Or have made terrorist threats.
You can
the
still go.
The website is abc.net.au.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, Shorty. Thanks for the information.
I'm in a hurry. I'm trying to get out of here to get to my flight.
I know. Well, be careful.
And look us up.
Are you taking a bus or what?
I'm going to Geneva.
You're going to Geneva.
Yes.
That's right. All right. Well, okay. Well, you can take a bus as far as, like New York.
Well, you know what?
What?
Mike, you just cracked me up.
I cracked me up, too.
And if you really listen to what the FBI, if you really listen to what the FBI was saying, he was describing the president, the idiot.
I know. Damn. All right, Shorty, be careful. Drop me an email from Geneva, all right?
Okay.
All right. Take care, Shorty. Take care. They're after Kathy. They've got us surrounded. We are surrounded, man.
I'm really getting scared.
Cuckoo.
Footsteps echo down the hall. No one's there at all. Bye.
Thank you for calling AT&T, where it's always a pleasure to serve you. Now please listen closely as our menu options have changed since your last call. For English, press 1. Para español, marque el número 2 y un agente del INS le asistirá pronto. For billing questions, press 1. To add new features to your account, press 2. For important new information about your privacy rights as an American citizen, press 3. For all other calls, I'm sorry, I did not recognize your response. If you're calling from your home telephone, press 1. Our records indicate that your billing address is 424 Azalea Avenue. If this is correct, press 1. Thank you for your inquiry. Please choose from the following options to help us better direct your call. Main menu. If you did not vote in the last election, press 0. If you voted for George Bush in the last election, press 1. If you voted for another candidate, press 2. Thank you. Your call will now be routed to our Special Services Department for further assistance. Please hold on through the short series of beeps and someone will be with you shortly. Please do not hang up or change locations during this time as you will only lose your place in line. We appreciate your business and your patience. You may feel a slight vibration through your telephone during this brief connection process. Your selection indicates that you may not have voted for President Bush in the last election. If this is correct, press 1. If this is not correct, please hang up now and carefully unplug your telephone from the wall jack for a minimum of 5 minutes. If you're unsure how to do this, please press 99 and someone from our Inside Wiring Safety Department will assist you. Are you still there? Please press 1 to verify that you did not vote for the current president in the last election. Thank you for verifying your selection. Please hold for the next available special services operator to assist you. Again, please do not hang up or make any unnecessary moves throughout your home, as this will only delay our ability to help you. Thank you for your patience. As a valued customer, AT&T understands your concerns about the probable sharing of your telephone records with government entities who are trying to protect you from undue bodily harm perpetrated by evil terrorists. AT&T is committed to your safety and security, and we respect your privacy rights as defined by the President's interpretation of current law during a time of war. Because you are a concerned citizen and a valued AT&T client, you are eligible to receive a special loyalty gift free of charge. Now please continue to hold so an operator can assist you in receiving this important prize. There's no need to enter your mailing address or phone number as we have this information in our records. Please wait through the silence for further instructions. You will not incur any additional charges while you are on hold. We appreciate your patience. Your expected hold time at Gitmo is approximately 10 years. AT&T, your private information delivered.
Well, that's for you, Shorty. It is 25 past the hour. George is calling from Pittsburgh, California. Hey, George.
Yes, George Clooney.
Yeah. Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm certain that I'm George Clooney now.
Yeah, right.
Well, it occurred about a month ago when I found out that Ted Haggard was a pure heterosexual, and I thought, what the hell?
Yeah.
I must be George Clooney.
You must be George Clooney. Yeah, I know. I understand.
Okay. What I want to talk about is, well, you were talking, well, they were saying, well, you know, well, technically, yeah, they're right. George Bush could fire all those attorneys and everything would be okay, right?
Yeah.
That means that one out here in California, when they bonked her over the head and dragged her out by her ankles, they put in their guy, and he continued to prosecute Jerry Lewis, right?
That's right. No, he didn't.
He didn't?
I don't think.
Huh.
Is Congressman Lewis being prosecuted? I don't think so. I think all that came to an end.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, that's a problem then, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And
that other guy, that CIA twit, Fargo, what a name. Whatever happened to the investigation that Carol Lamb was getting into about him, too?
Yeah, well, they took care of him, right?
Yeah, well, uh-huh.
No?
No, well, no. He's still he's still CIA-ing.
That's a problem.
Yes, it is, George.
And then that that guy from, let's see if I forget, John Kay from Arizona?
Yeah.
When Heather Thomas, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Heather, I forgot. Well, you know what I mean. I mean, it's not right. I mean, the subject's been beat to death. But
listen, I'll tell you what's coming, though, for sure, George.
Yeah.
The House of Cards is going to get shuffled, and these people are I swear, they're going to go down. George, I got to go. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
I'm a driver. I'm a winner. Things are going to change. I can feel it.
This is Laura Pigglesbush. When Georgie falls asleep, I creep into the Oval Office, sneak a ciggy, and turn on Mike Malloy. Then I reprogram Georgie's speed dial. The simple pleasures.
Twenty-five before the hour, we're coming right back to your phone calls here. Who's next? Who's next? Bob is calling from Seattle. Bob, welcome to the program. Hey, Bob. Hey, Bob. Rebob. Hey, Bob. 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 Let's put Bob on hold, and we'll try Angelo in Miami Beach. Hey, Angelo.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Okay. The term Klieg is Klegel Brothers, a manufacturer of theatrical lighting equipment, and he used to make carbon arc, DC powered carbon arc lamps, but I haven't seen a Klegel light in years. So I don't know why he used that term, because
well, as my correspondent in Florida said, the woman who's been was in the advertising business for years, it has a nice hard K, which makes it stand out in your head, and it's German.
That's correct. The Klegel Brothers were German.
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to let you know.
Thanks, Angelo. I appreciate that. That was my grandfather's name. Angelo, not Klegel. Alex is calling from Scottsdale, Arizona. Hey, Alex.
Hey. How you doing, Mike?
Doing fine. How are you?
The wind's blowing like a Dickens tonight.
What?
I said the wind was blowing like a Dickens tonight.
Yeah, apparently it still is.
Okay. I'm out of the wind now.
Oh, good.
Anyways, this thing with, the attorneys and the complete hypocriticism
yes.
of the administration.
Yes.
Getting to the point here, Colbert and then Bill Maher today did some tongue lashing. I don't know if you caught that or not.
Somebody sent me an email about it. He was on Oberman's program, and he said that no laws were broken. Bill Maher said no laws were broken in the firings, which is a BS to begin with, but it's kind of beside the point.
Well, what Bill was saying, he says, you know, how many times can you guys skirt the truth? And he had this other author on today, and he's saying, you know, this guy lies to his blank and blank and blank, right?
Yeah.
And Stephen Colbert came up with the thing that, he was calling the Democrats a bunch of kitty cats.
Yeah.
And why they haven't done something yet.
He was go ahead.
Yeah, but he was saying the fact that, you know, how many times does this guy have to dare you before you're going to go for this?
I know. That's kind of the question I've had also.
And, you know, what they come up with is they want to talk about Edwards' wife and the cancer and that Rush guy. The mendacity that he had to say what he said about the Edwards family was just beyond me.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, someday somebody's going to, you know.
Yes, I know. Don't.
That guy.
Yeah, don't say it on this program, but I know exactly what you mean.
I mean, come on. You know, if anything, if Edwards ever had some good fortune and a proper election without any, you know, unbiasedness in the counts, maybe he could do something for stem cell research. Because I have a couple of friends that are now suffering from lymphoma and probably will die from it.
Mm-hmm.
And you see what Michael J. Fox goes through and all the Americans that are suffering, and these people just don't get it. You still there, Mike?
Oh, yeah. I'm listening intently to what you're saying.
Because, what I was going to, and like middle-class America, like where we live here in Arizona, the rates of rentals, like a single mother, okay, gas is right now at the cheapest place, $2.75 a gallon. Okay, she's on a regular income. She's a single mother, whether she gets child support or not. But the places where she could rent an efficiency apartment from $300 to $500 are gone. Now an efficiency apartment in this town is $850.
Yeah, it's just like Atlanta. Same thing, sure.
And there's people that get 4 and 5 roommates and they live in one place. You know, yeah. We won't go into that. But
right.
The fact of the matter is they've driven this thing off the map. And, you know, there's the people that if you talk to them, like a Bush supporter, a neocon, the minute I bring anything up about any of this, they start talking about Clinton. I'm going, Clinton's not the president.
Right.
You know, and Clinton's not the problem here. You're the 29% that'll admit that you still voted for him. And I thought that AT&T thing was just wonderful. I was laughing so hard through that. It just made me, I've had a pretty good week this week, and I feel pretty happy about being in the world again for some other reason.
Well, that's good. That's good, Alex.
But, you know, when I see this stuff happening, it's like, how can you not see what's going on?
Right.
You know, and something's got to come of it. I mean, when 2008 hit and the elections hit, you know, the word R is probably not going to be used very often.
You mean
that's what I'm thinking.
You mean the letter R?
Or the word R that starts with R and ends with an N.
Oh.
You know, I think it's going to be curtains for a lot of these guys.
Well, God, I hope so.
Oh, you know, from the bottom of the R. But getting back to the single mother, I mean, how are they making it? And there's people on you know,
well, forget, you know, not forget, but aside from single mothers, what about married families where there are two partners and children? And how are they making it?
I don't see how they make it. You know, I'm self-employed and I'm up to 12 hours a day now, 7 days a week.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, I have handicaps and issues, but I don't consider myself handicapped. I'm just happy to be on this planet breathing and paying my debts.
I hear you.
You know, and, you know, these are all things that we all create ourselves, and we know that. But it's like I say to myself, I go out and I go beyond and above the call of duty in order to satisfy my debts.
Yeah,
and,
I hear you.
And I don't see how the regular guy does it making $7, $10, $12, even $12 an hour. I just don't see how they do it. It's just beyond me, Mike.
We're in a world of hurt. I hear you. Alex, thank you. Listen, are you coming to the birthday bash on the 15th?
It's very possible.
Well, I hope to meet you when you come, okay?
Okay. I will look forward to it, and that's the 15th of April.
15th of April.
All right.
Talk to you later. Thanks, Alex.
Hey, Mike, keep up the good work. I every day send good energy out in the universe because those are the people that come and visit us here are also watching, and they're just waiting for us to grow up.
Well, I hope we make it. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you, Mike.
Take care. Similar to what Alex just said, kind of. This is from Beth in San Francisco. Subject line, I work with a flying monkey. That sounds like one of those film noirs from the 40s, right? I work with a flying monkey. Dear Mike, I work part-time in an office with a flying monkey. Not only do I have to gaze upon a signed picture of George and Laura Bush that sits near his desk, it reads, thanks for your grassroots contribution. Grassroots. Are you kidding me? Aside from that, I must endure the filth that spews from his mouth from time to time. I guess I should be grateful that he doesn't throw it on the walls. We wage a war of sorts daily. He listens to the Pigman while I listen to my podcast of your program, as I am currently in a studio at nights. There are times when your voice cuts through the air and he shoots me a disapproving sidelong glance. What gets me with this guy, and with all of the flying monkey right, is that he will go out of the way to skirt the system he so vehemently defends as just and fair. From registering his car in another state, to putting his money into offshore accounts, to using a third address so that the government can't find him, he figuratively gives his God-fearing, truck-driving, heterosexual, white male country the finger. I once asked him why he didn't want to pay his taxes. He said to me, "The government gets enough of my money." So who's supposed to pay for your war? "I don't care, as long as it's not me." As long as it's not you. Really. You know, Mike, if people like him were part of a tribe 1,000 years ago, they'd be put on an ice floe, shunned to the desert, or thrown into the deep end of the piranha pool. They would be deemed as unproductive, destructive, and false, eaters of their own kind, and they would have been left to face the creatures of the wild alone. We, as the human race, are meant to protect the weak, strengthen our communities, and care for our environment. We are to have the integrity to stand up for our families and our morals in the face of evil. No one needs a Bible to explain these things to us because it is inherent. But not for these sons of bitches. Why? These right-wing morons are the very definition of hypocrites. They have no guilt or shame or any sense of responsibility. How can we as fellow members of this country stand for such behavior? My God, I have to work with one of these people. He's sitting right next to me, flapping his little wings and itching under his fez. Thanks to both you and Kathy and Nova M for keeping this show going. Keep on rocking in the free world. Beth in San Francisco. Well, thanks, Beth. That's one good thing I have found about working in a studio that consists of Kathy and me. She's not a flying monkey, and neither am I, and we just don't get exposed to it. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Thanks to our engineer and phone answerer and associate producer and all that stuff, Ian Huff, at KPHX in Phoenix, for helping us make the show possible tonight. Thanks, Ian. Also to Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Mark Marshall, our webmaster, the moderators at MikeMalloy.com, who handle the message board, like, you know. And by the way, go to NovemRadio.com and please sign up for downloads and podcasts and a chance to win $10,000. The executive producer of this program is Catherine Likebay. Thank you, Catherine. How's the contest coming for a nickname for Dana Perino?
Like, it's awesome.
That's good. That's always good. Back to your phone calls. Matthew is calling from Bedford, Texas. Hey, Matthew.
Hi, Mike. Listening to Shorty, I thought I was weird.
You are, Matthew. I've said before, you're the weirdest 17-year-old that calls this program. But that's why we love you so much.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
But, man, they're out to get me, Mike. They really are. But when we talk about neocons, I say that in the most derogatory way possible.
Yeah.
We know what they think, obviously, and as what they don't say in public, but we know what they also can say in private. And after a rather lengthy conversation with an evangelical neoconservative acquaintance of mine,
yeah,
as well as his father, who's even more radical than he is. The father brought up rather calmly, and I should note this should be no surprise to us, apart from the fact that he would openly admit it to me, is right, that all Muslims, not just the radical ones, all of them, liberal, conservative, lenient, or strict, quote, needs to all be killed, end quote, because, quote, Islam is a dangerous religion, end quote.
Yeah, well, that sounds like something from Ann Coulter. I believe that's almost a direct quote from Ann Coulter.
The father went on to say openly that all of the Middle East should be nuked, and the son, whom I know, I consider a friend, but he's more than a, like, my ear to the ground in terms of the neoconservative world,
right,
by saying that all Muslims do need to be killed, but he lightly disagreed with his father by saying that nuking them would go too far. And from my point of view, the father forgets that his precious Israel is in that little area around there.
Right.
But regardless, I witnessed the neocon at its prime, and he's calling for mass genocide.
Yeah, pretty scary, isn't it, Matthew, huh?
Well, I'm not surprised, but, you know, pretty soon they're going to be saying all liberals need to be killed, and that's when I'm going to have to start setting up a little room in my closet.
Well, Matthew, you know, the more things change, the more they remain the same. Back when you were just a gleam in your father's eye, they used to talk about turning North Vietnam into glass.
Oh.
By dropping nukes on the entire country. You know, glass the goddamn place! That was the right-wing call back in the late 60s, early 70s. So, right-wingers, neoconservatives, neo-Nazis, Republicans, they're all the same, have been shouting for mass death and genocide since they learned to walk upright. This is the only thing that they know how to do. This is how they respond. And, of course, with nuclear weapons, what these fools don't realize is that you can't drop a nuclear bomb without poisoning your own gene pool. But, you know, why bother educating them? If we have to go, we have to go. Right, Matthew?
Well, to educate someone, normally the person you're educating has to have a brain.
Well, that's very true, Matthew.
We like to compare them to monkeys, but at least monkeys have some manner of intelligence that when they touch an electrified wire, they don't touch it again.
Yeah, well...
But, you know, these neocons really are like monkeys in that really the only thing they're good for is being put in a rocket and launched into space for scientific research.
All right. All right. Well, Matthew, thanks for checking in, okay?
All righty.
All right. You take care. Take care, Matthew. Matthew's a trip. Speaking of Matthew, whatever happened to Brother Sky Blue? Not that there's any connection, but Matthew is one of our steady on callers, and Marge and Sky Blue, Reverend Sky Blue from Memphis. Chuck is calling on his way to Vegas. Hey, Chuck.
Hello, Mr. Malloy. First time listener.
First time listener.
Yes, sir.
Well, where you been the past 24 years?
Well. Just everywhere, but I just now got a Sirius radio. I'm listening to you on Sirius.
Yeah, well, do you like what you're hearing, or you just think I'm a weird son of a bitch from left-wing communism?
No, sir, no. I was raised up Republican.
Yeah.
And as I got older, I saw the good on both sides, and anyway, I've just gone on my own, and I'm kind of in the middle, but I am for the gun rights and stuff. But
well, Chuck, you say you're in the middle. You ever heard of there's a famous Texas philosopher, used to be the agricultural commissioner down there, Jim Hightower. Have you ever heard of him, Jim Hightower?
No, sir. But actually, I am from Fort Worth.
You are?
Sir,
Well, you need to find out about Jim Hightower. But you know what he said one time? He said, because you said you're kind of in the middle, you know, middle of the road kind of attitude. Jim Hightower said, the only thing you'll find in the middle of the road is a yellow line and dead armadillos. So you want to get out of the middle. Chuck, we got to go. Call me again when we still have some time left. It's a three-hour program, and we usually sign off about this time for the evening. Okay, Chuck?
Could I ask one thing real quick?
Well, if you make it in 10 seconds.
Okay. There was nine lawyers or attorneys that Bush fired. How many did Clinton fire?
Well, no, that's the wrong question, but I'll answer it tomorrow for you, Chuck. Clinton really didn't fire any. But I'll explain it to you tomorrow. I really will, Chuck. Thanks for participating, folks. We appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.